This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
The North Texas stories you need to know. This is the All Local from News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Austin York. Welcome to the afternoon All Local.
First, we start this hour with the situation at Dallas Police Headquarters. The city is soon going to be looking for a new police chief. Eddie Garcia leaving for Austin. He released a statement last week. He hasn't elaborated too much on that. I know he spoke with the morning news, and he's with us right now on KRLD.
Well, Chief, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us here at KRLD. And I guess the first real question is why this decision now?
Well, you know, all of us, I think any man or woman that wears this uniform, you know, has to come with the reality that we can't do this forever. You know, it's something that's been in my thoughts for a while. With regards to being able to concentrate on my kids and as they start their own lives, that I want to be a big part of that. You know, it would have been 33 years for me come February. And, you know, I only know how to lead one way. And anyone that thinks that there's balance in this job or in this position is doesn't understand the role. There is no balance. I mean, I come second, the department comes first, and that's the way I lead, and that's the way I think any police chief should lead. You go as fast as you can and as hard as you can for as long as you can. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I just felt that was my time to step away. And then obviously there was another opportunity that arose. And again, one thing, the retirement is first and foremost, and retirement from law enforcement, the position is secondary. That was not the way I wanted the message to come out, and I'm frustrated because of that, because I didn't get an opportunity to explain why. That's not the way my rank and file, who I absolutely adore, should have heard that. But those are the reasons. There's not much more to it.
Would it be fair then to use the word burnout, or is this just the opportunity to try something different?
I would say an opportunity to try something different. I mean, you know, burnout has such a negative connotation, but I'll be honest with you, I'm going to call it what you want to call it, to be frank. Going through, Darren's murder was difficult. Going through, it was a rough month. And there's things that, you know, again, with my children that are young adults that are starting their own lives and their own families soon, that I wanted to give that more attention. So I don't think I would call it burnout necessarily, because if my kids weren't in the situation they were in and wanted to do other things or what have you, I may not feel this way. But it was certainly a personal decision. Again, I owe everything to the men and women of this police department, my community. It's been fantastic. But yes, obviously I'm going to continue working in a role where I think, the things that I've learned, the mistakes that I've made, and how I've learned from them and the successes we've had, could hopefully, translate to success, as I help, and be part of the team, somewhere else.
I know that you have a great relationship with T.C. Broadnax. He's obviously down in Austin. How much of a role did he play for you in this decision, or are you just going to Austin?
Oh, no. I mean, obviously, if T.C. and John Fortune weren't in Austin, I wouldn't be going to Austin. However, the fact that he left didn't play much of a role in me retiring. It was my time to retire, but certainly the fact that I'd be going to Austin is because of that they're there. I have an opportunity to work with two individuals that I very much trust, and that, again, they're the ones that brought me here from California. And so there's obviously a strong relationship there. But obviously, you know, I will miss the relationships here. I will miss my mayor tremendously, who is has just been absolutely outstanding for this department and myself. And but yeah, I mean, like I said, these things are bifurcated. The one thing didn't necessarily have to do with the other. Obviously, when you hang up, I don't think anyone understands. You know, and I think people are starting to see how difficult the decision is to hang up a uniform that I've worn since I was 21 years old. So, you know, all that plays a role.
What was the highest point of your tenure in Dallas that you're always going to remember with a smile?
Oh, you know what? I will tell you this. I mean, it almost seems cliche because I use it constantly. But if there was one way that I would sum up my time here in Dallas, is a friend of mine said, he said to me during a podcast, he said, "Boss, you're an old street cop masquerading as a four-star chief." I could not be prouder of the fact that my men and women saw that I was a cop first and I was a chief second. And I'm very proud of that.
All right. We obviously have to think about a replacement now. How much of a say are you going to have in that? And who do you hope that the city goes with?
Well, I don't know how much. I will say this in all fairness to the interim city manager, when this got leaked, I mean, these are conversations that we would have been having this week. And so obviously these conversations will happen soon. You know, obviously we understand, you know, the situation with, you know, the permanent role from a city manager perspective. I have the utmost respect and admiration for one of my executive assistant chiefs, Mike Igo, who's been here. Actually, him and I have been in law enforcement for the exact same time, that I think he could step in and do a great job, whether it's on the interim basis or on the long-term basis. You know, one thing I'll say is, you know, when I understand frustrations and people, I don't know if you want to call it sad, angry, whatever, that I'm leaving, and when the department's in a good place, but there's a reason why this department's in a good place right now and moving in the right direction. And it's because the people that are within these walls. So I would hope that the city would take a very serious look at those that are capable, that have been in this fight with me, for the last nearly 4 years.
And whoever that replacement is, if you could pass along one little nugget of advice to them moving forward, what would it be?
I would say remember that, identify who your stakeholders are. And I would say remember the emotional bank account. You know, I'll say this, one of the books that I had to read long ago for a promotional exam with Stephen Covey's Seven Habits book. And, you know, of all the things that were in that book, there's two parts that I'll always remember that have helped me in my career. One is the quadrants, and the other one is the emotional bank account. We have an emotional bank account with everyone we deal with our rank and file, with our community, with our city hall, with our association. And you have to recognize when your actions result in what would look like withdrawals, and know that. And be mindful of the fact that if you make a withdrawal, you have to make deposits. And if you have that in mind with all your stakeholders, you'll be in good shape.
Chief, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
I just wanted to ask one more question, though, about the you come from San Jose and then to Dallas. What will be the one thing that you hold dear about the city of Dallas before you leave?
Well, you know, first of all, I'll say this. I mean, the officers at both departments are amazing. If there's one thing in Dallas I'll say now to you, as I've said at many, many meetings before, is the support. The support that law enforcement gets in the city of Dallas, and quite frankly in the state of Texas, is nothing that I've ever seen before. I've had conversations with Governor Abbott, with his support of law enforcement, with the mayor's support of law enforcement, Mayor Johnson's support, that I'd never heard and I've been a cop for, you know, going on 33 years. And, you know, we're in a place, you know, I come from a place where people who support law enforcement are almost afraid to stand up and say they support law enforcement. And I come to a state and I come to a city who truly supports law enforcement. Yes, they will hold us accountable. And yes, they want us to be professional. We will strive to be that way. But people love their police department. People love their honorable men and women here. And they're not afraid to say it. And that is something that, coming from a different place, this is not a small thing for me. And I love saying it to my rank and file, to understand that when times get tough and we get hammered on different things, man, it could be worse, because we have that support here. And our people do want, our residents want us to succeed, and they're vocal about it, more so than any other place that I've been at.
Chief, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much again, Dallas Police Chief Eddie Garcia with us here on KRLD. It's interesting because I've seen a lot of police chiefs come and go. And more often than not, when one leaves, the reaction generally on the part of the public and the rank and file, too, is, well, all right, we'll get another one.
This guy made an impact in 3.5 years. I can't think of a more popular chief. And you heard just last week we talked to the Police Association president, said he's one of the greatest of all time in the city of Dallas.
A real outpouring, for sure. Governor of Nebraska has officially killed the idea of making that state winner take all in the upcoming presidential election. We talked about this yesterday. If the polls are right, the Electoral College could wind up at 270 to 268 in favor of Kamala Harris. But Nebraska awards its electoral votes by congressional district. And they do have one blue district in that sea of red up there. That could be the difference for Harris. But if you take it away and give it to Trump, then you get a 269 to 269 tie, and it would go to the House of Representatives, which is controlled by the GOP. That means Trump would likely win. And so the Republicans cooked up this plan, and it almost worked, were it not for one Republican state senator, Mike McDonnell, who voted against it. And now the governor is saying it's too late to call a special session to try and ram it through. Well, last night, McDonnell, he explained his no vote on MSNBC.
The reason I want to keep the system we have and not go to winner take all, which was changed in 1991, was the idea that it makes Omaha relevant. That's where the second congressional district is. And it makes the dollars, of course, the economic impact. But it makes people work for our vote. Come on in and talk to us and work for our vote. And I think sometimes people say, oh, Nebraska, nice. And they think that that's a sign of weakness. It's not. We work hard and we play by the rules. So come on in, work hard, play by the rules. Don't try to change them, you know, with 42 days left to try to change the rules that have been in place since 1991. And I've talked about this, and other senators have talked about it since 17 when I was elected. If the people of Nebraska want to do it 2 years out and let whoever wants to run for president of the United States know the rules, right, I think that would be fair. I still think we should keep winner take all. And I've compared it, and I know this isn't a game, and I know a football game is not very important. But the idea that all of a sudden a coach calls a timeout with 2 minutes left and says, I want to change the value of the field goal from 3 points to four, and that's how I'm going to win. It just doesn't ring true, and that's not part of Nebraska values. We want to let the people make the decision. And as you've said earlier, you know, look at the past. Look at the idea of President Biden in 20, President Trump in 16. You know, work for that vote, and you can win it. But you got to come in and work, and you got to talk to us.
And even Trump is admitting as much. He said yesterday, well, I won that district in 2016. I guess I'll have to just do it again. Let's bring in Washington Post reporter Patrick Svitek. He's been covering this story. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. Could this 269 to 269 scenario really play out, or are we making too big a deal out of this?
No, I don't think you're making too big of a deal. I think there's two reasons why it's a big deal. Number one, it's what you just described, which is this is a critical vote, a critical electoral vote in what is expected to be a very close presidential race. And number two, it would be pretty remarkable for a state to change the way it awards electoral votes, this close to the actual presidential election. So I think those are two of the reasons why this has been so closely watched.
Let's look at the big picture, though. McDonnell, the state senator, he's told the candidates, come to Omaha and earn that vote. What if every state did that? If every state awarded those votes by congressional district, I mean, that could fundamentally change the way campaigns are run, correct?
Yeah, that would dramatically reshape the way that presidential campaigns are run. It would force candidates to come to states that are, otherwise at the statewide level, unfriendly to them, but to campaign in congressional districts where the demographics or the political landscape may be more friendly to them. I mean, that is exactly what has played out in Nebraska in recent elections. Nebraska, as a statewide political scene is strongly Republican, but you have this congressional district in the Omaha area that is more competitive. And so you have seen Democratic presidential candidates come and campaign in Omaha and try to get that single electoral vote, even though Nebraska is otherwise a strongly Republican state. I mean, it would be like, You know, I think, you know, maybe the Texas example would be, even though Texas is a Republican state at the statewide level, if suddenly there were an electoral vote up for grabs, you know, in a more politically competitive place like Fort Worth, for example, or, you know, some place in Tarrant County, you'd have, you know, more Democrats coming in and campaigning in Texas, because even though it's Republican statewide, favors Republican statewide, you know, an area like Tarrant County is more politically competitive.
And they would not only have to go to those states, they would have to advertise in those states, too. This would make money even more of a factor, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It would certainly be an economic boon for the the TV and radio stations in those metropolitan areas. You know, I should note, though, only Nebraska and Maine right now award their electoral votes like this. In, you know, every other part of the country, every other state, the winner of the statewide vote receives all the electoral votes that are available in that state.
So McDonald has said, and we just played the cut, if you're going to do something like this, don't do it 6 weeks before the election. Maybe do it in the midterms. Could you make that change at that point? Could you see that happening in Nebraska and even possibly Maine?
What McDonald was pushing for was, in their next legislative session, to pass a proposed constitutional amendment to put this issue to the voters, to ask the voters of Nebraska to decide if they want to go back to a winner-take-all system. I haven't heard a lot of momentum toward that, just because the focus in Nebraska has been around actually just making the change at the legislative level. So we'll have to see if that becomes a real discussion in Nebraska after this election. You know, I have a feeling that if Trump loses the election, the presidential election, that would probably gain more momentum in Nebraska.
Washington Post reporter Patrick Svitek with us on KRLD. And that's the thing. If you don't like the Electoral College, and a lot of people don't, too bad. We may be stuck with it, because if you're going to change it, you got to get, you know, it's got to take a constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
And good luck getting that through Congress and then through the states. So you might have to do it on a state-by-state basis like Nebraska and Maine have done.
And then you get all kinds of craziness, kind of like if you think the abortion issue is confusing different states, could you imagine doing it different states with each district now casting a vote? I mean, it would just be insane. So the winner-take-all, I know that people don't like the current system because the majority rule doesn't always go into effect like 2000 and 2016, but it is oftentimes the best way, or else you're going to have these candidates going to every state and basically focusing on the big cities only.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
We're getting new details this afternoon out of Frisco. We've been following the story all day long. Firefighters fight a huge chemical fire this morning at a pool warehouse. And now 10 people had to go to the hospital, 3 firefighters, 7 police officers, for exposure.
The fire started at this pool supply company about 7:30.
It was reported by an employee of the business. She said that she saw, you know, like a haze or what might look like fog, went out, noticed there was a fire.
Fire Marshal Kelly Kistner says they urge people nearby to shelter in place because of the chemicals the company stores.
Our staff were all on breathing apparatus. We put it in place because we didn't know at the time. What I can tell you is that everybody in town, everybody around here is safe.
He says air and water testing shows they're both safe too. In Frisco, Alan Skaya, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Fire department says they're still working on the cause, but they say it's probably a chemical reaction.
Well, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is still planning his appeal that the State Fair of Texas has their gun ban, but KRLD's LP Phillips says it hasn't quite happened.
With just 2 days before the fair starts, Paxton says he'll make a Hail Mary pitch to the Texas Supreme Court. The fight is over the fair's decision to ban guns, a rule made after last year's shooting that left 3 wounded. Paxton says citizens have the right to carry guns on government property. The state fair says it's a not-for-profit agency that is leasing the land and has the right to make that rule. Last week, a Dallas County judge rejected the argument, so did an appeals court yesterday. It'll be up to the Supreme Court to set deadlines for court filings from the city, then make a decision. From the 24-Hour News Center, LP Phillips News, Radio 1080 KRLD.
Now let's focus on the fair, on the state fair itself. It opens on Friday. Their president, Mitchell Gleyber, says they brought more than 2.3 million people to the state fair last year, and this weekend's going to be huge. It's opening weekend, and they've got the state fair classic football game Saturday at the Cotton Bowl.
This last week leading up to the fair is always extremely busy. Everybody, you know, moves in, the vendors move in, there's a lot of chaos around the grounds, but it's all part of the excitement that builds to our opening on Friday.
That state fair classic football game is Grambling versus Prairie View, but everyone talks about the battle of the bands. You know, UNT estimates that the fair brings in around $680 million to the economy. That's up from $500 million just 8 years ago. And the football games alone, this one and Texas OU, bring in $62 million on their own.
The All Local is updated 3 times a day. For the latest news, weather, and traffic, listen to News Radio 1080 KRLD. Visit KRLD.com, download the Odyssey app, or ask your smart speaker to play News Radio 1080 KRLD.